The Multicultural Centre for Women's Health acknowledges and pays respect to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation on whose land we work on. Aboriginal sovereignty was never ceded. We recognise that as immigrants to this country, we benefit from the colonisation of the land now called Australia and have a shared responsibility to acknowledge the harm done to its first peoples and work towards respect and recognition. We recognise that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women are leaders in working to prevent the disproportionate levels of violence enacted against them, their children and their families. We also acknowledge and celebrate that intersectional theory has largely emerged from Black and Indigenous feminist activism and expertise in the United States and around the world, including Australia. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, their ancestors and elders, both past, present, and acknowledge their continuing connection to land, sea, and community. We hope our work contributes to the wider project of respect and recognition between cultures in Australia. Hello and welcome. My name is Hope Matumbu, and this is a special program for International Women's Day, looking into 40 years of immigrant and refugee women's health and well-being. The Multicultural Centre for Women's Health, or MCWH, is a national organization run by immigrant and refugee women dedicated to immigrant and refugee women's health. This year, MCWH is celebrating 40 years of immigrant and refugee women's leadership in health and well-being. In this one-hour program, we'll be speaking with four women who have helped shape MCWH's history and explore how MCWH has revolutionized women's health services in Australia, as well as discuss MCWH's relevance around issues immigrant and refugee women face today. We'll also be reflecting on another 40 years to come. My first guest is the Health Education Manager at the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health, Amira Romanovic. Hi, Amira. Thank you so much for joining us on International Women's Day.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure, really, to be here.
Thank you. How long have you been involved with MCWH and what has your role been?
Oh, it's now 17 years. And it's altogether 25 years since I'm in Australia. So most of my time I have spent in MCWH. My first role was a training and development officer in MCWH. And I think that my educational background as a high school teacher helped a lot in really transferring my knowledge of teaching to adult learning, and that worked really well. I really enjoyed that transfer from educating young people and children to adults, and it worked very well for me. So I stayed in that position of training and development for 8 years, and then I moved into position of managing team of bilingual health educators, organizing the work and really liaising with other stakeholders, mostly women and women's group, and also workplaces, union representatives, etc., to bring that program to the full speed. And that's what I enjoy the most. And still now I'm in that position.
And why was there a need for services like MCWH in Australia in the 70s?
Well, in the 70s, I think there is a period when many migrant women, many migrant families start arriving, and they were already here, especially Greek and Italian, Macedonian community. There is not many services that will attend to the needs of migrant and refugee women at that time. There is a committee established to discuss and to see, you know, how this woman could be assisted in a way that we know that they have enough information to make informed decision about what they're going to do in relation to family planning. And that's how establishment or conception of our little organization started, with a very, very small team of people and very small fund of something, if I remember, something like $2,000, and with 12 very enthusiastic peer educators who were prepared to go into workplaces, community settings, and talk to women about family planning and the choices available, but also how to navigate health system in Australia. So from that time, the results were very soon obvious that women actually first didn't have time. They were all employed in mostly textile, clothing, and footwear industry. It was very long hours. They were pretty much isolated from the broader community. If the factory employed a lot of Italian women, most Italian women will come and join. So pretty much the language that they were using in the factory was Italian, and most of the time they would spend and then going home or cooking and attending to the family needs. There were no time pretty much to find out any information and really think about their health seriously. So our educators were chosen to represent the languages and the cultural background of the women that we worked with, and they were able to go and talk to women in their workplaces over their lunchtime break. And they will communicate those messages in some informal way around the lunch and really make sure that women understand the messages that are communicated to them. But also, in the same time, our educators were trying to learn from them or find out from the women themselves what their needs are or what they're interested in and what would be helpful, what kind of information would be helpful for them. So that's, with those information in hand, we were able to really advocate on behalf of migrant women that we worked with. And that could be done only because our educators were part of that community. They understood the culture inside out because they were part of it and they're growing up with it, plus the language. And we know that culture plays a huge role in health-seeking behavior, understanding health and how health happens, understanding the very concept of health prevention, which is not the same in every culture, and especially when you come to the new place and totally new system. It doesn't mean that women don't know how to look after themselves, but they were pretty much dislocated from very safe, protective environment where they had extended family, where they had system that they perfectly understood. They had that safety nets around them, like knowledge and wisdom of their family members, the elders, the mothers, the aunties, that they can utilize to make sure that they stay healthy. Nothing of that were here. So they're totally dislocated from one place that they could feel very self-sufficient and very confident how they're dealing with day-to-day issues and health, to this place where they didn't know much about the system and how to access information. So we were there to address that issue and fill in the gap.
That's wonderful. And now fast forward, and you know, there's a whole entire health education team of bilingual health educators. How has MCWH changed since the time you were talking about? And what are your health educators? What does that program look now?
Wow, it's a huge difference, as you could imagine. So we started pretty much with one topic, almost. We were talking just about family planning because that was the issue that was picked up at that time. But we know that for women, not only family planning is the health issue like for anybody else. There is so many other issues that women wanted to know about and learn about, and also how to navigate the health system in here that is quite complex and obviously very different from the country of origin. So our program developed into many, many other topics. So currently, we really can say with confidence that we cover holistically women's health, all aspects of women's health, including sexual health, reproductive health, mental health and well-being, preventing chronic diseases, family planning prevention and a healthy relationship, occupational health and safety for women in workplace. So this is all that has developed over time, and also through our research on the ground, talking to women, working with our stakeholders to find out what other issues are important to them and what they want to find out. So I think that the model that we apply in our health education and promotion is very unique, not only in Australia, but throughout the world, as long as we know that going to workplaces with a team of bicultural, bilingual, highly qualified and educated, accredited health educators brings a huge difference within the community and the level of knowledge and confidence experience after our program and the readiness to share this knowledge, because women are by their nature very generous in sharing their knowledge and talking to each other what they had opportunity or fortune to learn, because we can't obviously access every woman in Victoria. But those who we access and have opportunity and privilege to talk to, we encourage to share information with others, women. And obviously, we back up our health education sessions always with multilingual resources, written resources that women can share between themselves and with their family members.
And for anybody who's listening out there who maybe has a group of women from a particular cultural background, these health talks are free if yes. people call into book, yeah. aren't they?
So all our health education is funded by Department of Health through family planning. And we have allocated budget to cover a certain number of health education sessions throughout Victoria. So we are statewide. We have no boundaries. So we can provide health education anywhere and everywhere where women meet. So we do outreach. We don't expect women, obviously, to find where we are and to make trips to our office. But we go wherever they feel comfortable, wherever they feel safe, and wherever they meet anyway for some reason, either for social gathering or for some education or workplace. And we are quite happy to respond to their needs anytime they need it. It's a just simple call to our office. They can call our office, or they can jump on the website and inquire through that. But either way, we will straight away respond to their request.
Sure. And what is the training process for women who identify as speaking languages other than English in terms of becoming a bilingual health educator?
Well, I encourage always women who are passionate about sharing knowledge and working within the community sphere and working with the community, empowering community, to give us a call. They can give me a call and just send expression of interest, letters stating what they do, what languages do they speak and write fluently. And then every 3 to 4 years, we do recruitment of new peer educators. And we're always looking for people who are passionate about working in a community setting. We might discuss opportunities for potential training and becoming one of our bilingual health educators.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this International Women's Day, Amira. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you're just tuning in, I was speaking with Amira Romanovic, the Health Education Manager at the Multicultural Center for Women's Health.
Celebrate International Women's Day with 3CR as we bring you 24 hours of awesome women and gender-diverse broadcasting. Check out our grid online at 3cr.org.au/IWD2018. Tune in from midnight to midnight on Thursday the 8th of March for women and gender-diverse news, views, arts, science, music, current affairs, talkback, community languages and much more. In front of the mic, on the panel and behind the scenes on International Women's Day at 3CR, Women Run Things.
My next guest is Carmela Irecitano, the Multilingual Library and Resource Coordinator at the Multicultural Center for Women's Health. Hi, Carmela. Thank you so much for joining us on International Women's Day.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak.
How long have you been involved with MCWH and what has your role been?
Currently, I am the Multilingual Library and Resource Coordinator, and I came across it, I guess, in a way by accident. I have been with the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health for well over 20 years, and I've always been quite passionate about women having the right to information in their own language. I joined the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health when it was called WICH, Women in Industry and Community Health, and we were located on Johnston Street, Fitzroy. The building was a two-storey terrace house with no air conditioning, but we did have computers. I still remember, in order to access the internet, we had to click on a separate modem to get it all started. I can still hear the sound of the buzzing and the ting, which meant we were finally connected to the internet. A lot has changed. When I started, as I said, at WICH, my role was to create a resource directory around Melbourne that showed medical centres had bilingual doctors. And it was meant to be a six-month position. Well, sort of. It kind of turned into quite a few years from that. During my time, I've worked on projects, I've done office management, library resource work, and I'm now truly doing what I feel immensely strongly about, and that is I support immigrant and refugee women through multilingual information, library and referral pathways.
And can you take us through what kinds of resources you have in your multilingual library and are they available electronically as well?
The MCWH's library has existed for as definitely as long as I've been there. And one of the main passions this year for me has been to rebuild our library. And even though it has been a really physically laborious and very intensive process for the last year, I think it's been really good for me. That's something obviously I say now. You should have spoken to me 6 months ago. It was not like that. But it was good because it gave me the opportunity to go through all the books and all the reports, and it was amazing to look at all the stories, but also look at all the topics that we covered that went, that dated back to before the 80s. There were still stories about migrant women and migration, women in the workplace, violence against women, feminism, contraception and sexuality. And we're still collecting today. I found it so interesting how that we were part of the conversation even back then. And today we continue to be a part of that conversation and to keep pushing those boundaries.
Mm. And what languages and topics do your resources cover?
We have currently a resource collection of over 90 languages. We cover a range of topics from women's sexual and reproductive health, mental health issues, healthy living, as well as resources on prevention of violence against women. We also have in our library books in Arabic and Chinese, in Italian, Greek and Vietnamese. We collect reports in the areas of immigrant women's health. Currently, we don't have the resource collection online, but we look to doing that in the future. However, if you do want to find out a little bit more about what we have in our library and in our resource collection, just log on to our website and you can have a look through the online catalogue.
And how does the library system work? Who can access it and who uses it the most?
The library is open to all women to come in. You will need to be a member of our library and we welcome you to come in and browse and borrow the books. Membership is free and you have access to not only the library books, but you can browse through our resources, our multilingual resources.
And where does your passion come from in terms of supporting women having the right to receiving health resources in their own language? Where does that come from?
Like many of us at MCWH, we all have a story to tell. And like many children of migrants, my parents came to Australia in 63. When they arrived, they went to work in the factory. They didn't know how to speak any English. And then once the three of us came along, my brother and sister, we became their interpreters, their system navigators, their carers for them, and as well as our extended family.
Mm.
I've walked into hospitals or the bank, and when I see a situation where the child's the interpreter, it takes me back immediately. That enormous feeling of responsibility, paying the closest of attention to make sure you haven't missed anything that the adults are expecting for you to interpret. So it does take you back and it makes you feel for that young child doing that for their parents today. And this is why it's so important that an organisation like MCWH exists. It's about providing health information to women in their language so that they can make decisions for themselves about them, their health, their well-being, which is why I keep doing what I do.
And I guess the library resources work very closely with the bilingual health education program. Can you tell us a bit about that?
My main role in the organisation is to ensure our BHEs have up-to-date multilingual health information in the language so they can take them out to the health education sessions with them. Resources that they take out with them include not only the pamphlets and fact sheets, but we've got audios and videos or film clips, what you call them now, charts and health education models. It's just amazing to be able to go out there to a session and to see the women have a complete understanding of what is being explained to them in their own language. Providing health information isn't a complicated formula, but providing quality information to a woman within her own cultural context, mapping out services, breaking down barriers that challenge the cultural dynamics that can make a positive change to improve the quality of her life. That's what requires particular skill and is quite unique, and that's what MCWH does.
Mm.
I strongly believe that providing women with information or providing a platform where they can access their information, ask questions and feel more confident in their decision-making is empowering to the women. It's the most empowering thing, I believe, and that's why I continue to do what I do.
Mm. And what are some of your fondest memories from your time at MCWH?
That's a really great question. It's also a really challenging question because I have to think back. But I have to say that I've had quite a few memorable moments. It's probably pretty awesome to go out and be a part or watch the bilingual health educators during a session. It's amazing to see the rapport that they build with the women in the community. It's unbelievable the questions the women ask the educator. It's just such an engaging, fun, it's just a really wonderful experience. The other one of the most memorable moments is, I think easily on a yearly basis, I am pretty amazed and impressed and also inspired by the different women and the various women who walk through our organisation, the women that we work with. Every day you go in and you smile because you're doing what you love to do. I always say this, I do have the best job in the world and I really mean it. But I am inspired by the women I work with. 40 years is pretty fantastic, amazing actually. I do want to acknowledge and thank the amazing women who were the catalysts who went into factories in the 70s and spoke to women in their own language and gave them information about contraception. It was you who valued and gave immigrant women at that time the opportunity to have more control over their health. I see MCWH, yes, we are 40 years old, but we're very much a futuristic organisation that I think that will grow and prosper. We will continue to lead and revolutionise immigrant and women's health and well-being. Our woman-to-woman approach works and it's unique. We will not lose the essence of our work because our approach is unique and technology will only give us more of an opportunity to amplify our voice. Happy International Women's Day to all the amazing women out there.
Oh, thank you so much, Carmela, and happy International Women's Day to you as well.
Thank you, Hope.
Thank you. And if you're just tuning in, I was speaking with Carmela Irecitano, the Multilingual Library and Resource Coordinator at the Multicultural Center for Women's Health. Na, 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 na.
Make sure you get to the International Women's Day Rally and March in 2018. It's on Thursday, the 8th of March at 5:30 p.m. at the State Library. Hear from extraordinary women activists, including unionists, disability rights activists, Aboriginal women, and those campaigning against police repression. Join working women across Victoria for IWD on Thursday, the 8th of March at 5:30 p.m. at the State Library. We have a world to win.
My name is Hope Matumbu and you're tuned in to 3CR 855 AM. It's International Women's Day and you've been listening to a special program exploring and celebrating the work of the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health. This year, MCWH is celebrating 40 years of immigrant and refugee women's leadership in health and well-being. And my next guest is Monique Hamid, the National Training Officer at the Multicultural Center for Women's Health. Welcome, Monique. Thank you so much for speaking to us on International Women's Day.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
How long have you been involved with MCWH and what has your role been?
So I started working with MCWH in 2015. I was working on the Our Voices Changing Cultures project, which was working with young LGBT women from refugee and immigrant backgrounds. And when that contract was up after a year, I was offered the role as training officer. So the training program, it has both internal and external. I'm in charge of the external training. So that's known as the Common Threads training program. And currently that's a two-day cross-cultural training program that's marketed at health workers who want to improve their support of people from refugee and immigrant backgrounds.
And how's that different from cultural competency?
There's a lot of words that are used to describe, I guess, cross-cultural training. One that you often hear is cultural competency. So cultural competency, it started getting used in the 1990s, and it was very much about training health practitioners to be aware of particular health beliefs that they thought might be in conflict with the current biomedical model. And it was very much based around this idea of understanding the other, and I'm doing quotation marks around the other, which people won't be able to see. But it was very much supporting this idea that each culture's characteristics could be identified and then studied and managed. So an example would be, you know, you might have an information sheet that would tell you how to work with the Indian community. So there would a cultural competency approach would say, you know, there's a checklist approach for each migrant or refugee community. And so our training is really moving away from that model. It's embracing more of a cultural humility approach, which is very similar to a cultural safety approach in that it asks people to have a more nuanced and complex understanding of what culture is. And the main points are that culture is broad, fluid, and constantly changing. Culture and health is political, and that culture is linked to power and privilege. So that's three things that I don't think the traditional cultural competency approach necessarily engaged with.
And so when you deliver this training, it's usually for people in the health sector?
Yeah, so we've delivered to a range of different groups. We've worked with the alcohol and drug sector, nurses and midwives. We've done work with the LGBTIQ sector. So each time we'll deliver essentially the Common Threads training, but we'll tailor it to fit the people that we're working with.
And why is it important to talk about these things as well as race and racism in relation to the health sector?
I think that as workers, we're rarely asked to self-reflect on our power and privilege. But I think that those things are really important to do if we want to, support refugee and immigrant communities. It's a really challenging two-day course because I think it's asking participants to look inwards and self-reflect on their power and privilege as workers, which is not something that I think we're often asked to do in this space. We talk a lot about things like whiteness and race, which I don't think are that common in many cultural competency programs. And we talk about class as well. And I think those three things are really challenging to people who've never been asked to talk about those things. And these are topics that we aren't usually asked to talk about in the health sector. We're so often focused on the people that we're servicing. So it's all about their culture and their oppression and their marginalisation. But, you know, I always think that marginalisation and oppression can't exist without the relative power and privilege. So both conversations are really important.
Mm.
I think that in Australia, people don't like talking about race and racism. I think that racism is a really big deal in Australia in terms of Australia's history. But in terms of, you know, the way that non-white people experience the world today. And I think that, you know, you can't talk about racism and the effects that it has on people if you don't talk about race. And I think even when people are not saying that word race, they are still talking about it in all these different ways that they might not be aware of. So in the training, we really try and give people the confidence to start talking about race. We make the point that we don't mean it as a biological or genetic category, as it's often thought and has historically been taught, but more in the social and political sense. So we use it as a way of interpreting and interrogating unequal power relationships between social groups. I think inviting people to talk about it is really about improving the support needs of immigrant and refugee communities.
In terms of being someone, you know, who identifies as a person of colour, how do you feel when you deliver this training, of course, because, you know, you talk about, you know, it's a really challenging course. So how do people, you know, how do you feel presenting it and how do people take it?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the group. Some groups have been amazing and they've been really prepared to do that really hard work of self-reflecting and thinking about, you know, who they are. But I think some people, there is a little bit of resistance. And in those instances, it is really challenging as a trainer as well, because, as you said, I myself have a personal connection to these experiences of racism growing up in Australia. And so trying to be the trainer and trying to be professional, but also talking about something that is really personal to me can sometimes get, quite hard.
And as well, you know, the work of MCWH, there's a lot of research as well that underpins a lot of, you know, the wider work that you do, including the training program. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the theories that underpin the training program?
Yep. So we very much work under an intersectional framework. So, you know, we talk about intersectionality a lot, and I think it can be a very daunting topic for a lot of people because this is a word that's popping up more and more, but a lot of people feel confused about how to define it or what it means and how to even use it in a sentence. So I would say that all of our activities relate back to this idea of using an intersectional framework, and it's something that we do in all of our work at MCWH. But it's just this idea that different dimensions of social life can't be separated out into discrete or pure strands. So to use myself as an example, I can't necessarily separate the part of myself that is woman and the part that is racialized. But at the same time, we want people to think about power on not just that individual level, but also on the organizational and structural. So moving away from thinking, you know, a person is intersectional because they represent all of these marginalized groups, and thinking, you know, we can analyze power on all those different levels in any situation that we're in. So even if we're doing a project where, you know, we might think, oh, it's not very intersectional because it's only working with, you know, a very standard mainstream group, we could still think about how power plays out in that situation and how, for example, whiteness is intersecting with middle classness, is intersecting with, you know, able-bodied privilege. Like, those things could still be analysed with an intersectional frame. So, yeah, it's that definitely is a big part of the training program. And, yeah, this idea of getting people to talk about power on all levels.
And you've been at MCH for how many years now?
Three, I think.
Yeah. And what are some of your fondest memories?
My fondest memories? I think I loved running the focus groups for my project, that when I first started, seeing so many women in the room who had, like, some of them had never met another person who was also from a migrant background who was also queer or trans. And I think that moment was really special. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest ones. But I also think doing our 40th year this year and meeting people from the last 40 years of MCWH's history has been amazing as well, to realise that, you know, sometimes when you work you can think like nothing happened before you got there.
Yeah.
Which sounds silly, but I think sometimes we think like that, and just realising how much work has gone into this organisation over the years and all of the different stages that they've been through has been really humbling.
For any people out there who are interested in booking in some of this cross-cultural humility training, where can they go, Monique?
People can email us at training@mcwh.com.au to request the Common Threads training. But we're also currently working on a program where we're not just offering the two-day, but we're also offering a range of shorter workshops that will be held in Collingwood at the MCWH office. So they will probably start to be advertised in the second part of this year. But if you'd like more information about that, you can also email us.
And for all of our listeners, MCWH is a statewide service, so Monique, you're willing and happy to travel.
Yes, even nationwide. Oh. So we can go to other states.
Yeah, of course, National Training Officer. Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this International Women's Day, Monique.
Thank you, Hope. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And if you're just tuning in to 3CR 855 AM, it's International Women's Day, and I was just speaking with Monique Hamid, the National Training Officer at the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health.
Join the Palm Sunday Walk for Justice and add your voice to the call for change to refugee policy. Demand Australia's political leaders to abandon the current harsh and unjust policies and provide permanent protection for refugees. Stand with people from all over Melbourne. Demand the evacuation of Manus and Nauru and end the cruelty. Meet at the State Library of Victoria on the 25th of March at 1:30 p.m. Palm Sunday Walk for Justice is a 3CR supporter.
And our final guest for our 40 years of immigrant and refugee women's health and well-being is Adele Modolo. Adele is the executive officer at the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health. Hi, Adele. Thank you so much for joining us on 3CR Community Radio.
Thanks for having me, Hope.
So can you tell us how long you've been involved with MCWH and what your role has been throughout the years?
Sure. I've been involved with MCWH since it was a much smaller organisation called WICH, Women in Industry and Community Health, and that was back in the early 90s, where I first of all approached the organisation to help me out with a project that I was working on, and then I stayed. And I never left. And I did a couple of different roles, working in information provision for migrant women, some program work. And at the moment, I'm working as the executive director of the organisation.
So how many years is that in total?
23, I believe.
That's amazing. And what are some of the issues that my immigrant and refugee women face or still face today?
The issues are very much the same as those issues that migrant and refugee women faced in the 90s, and in fact, right back in the 70s when this organisation first started. The first problem was that it was very difficult for migrant women to get information in their language about their health. And one of the things that the people who started up this organisation found was that they would often get that information from medical practitioners who also had lots of very strange and stereotyped understandings of what migrant women's lives were like and what their approach to health was. So the program that was developed was really tailored around the idea that migrant women have the best knowledge about their own health and well-being, and so a peer education program was developed where migrant women themselves were trained up to deliver information and education about contraception, which was the key issue at the time, to other migrant women who were working in factories and other workplaces. So it was a peer education model. The idea behind it was, let's get women's health right out of the clinical setting and let's locate it in a community-based setting where migrant women are able to talk with each other about what their needs are and how they're going to get the best information about contraception.
Mm. What does the future look like for MCWH?
The future is very bright in the sense that we're still very much at the grassroots and at the front line of what migrant women are experiencing. So we've changed a lot over the years in the sense that we now have adapted to tailor our programs to the different demographic that is coming to Australia. So back in the 70s, it was very much a European cohort. And of course, the diversity that we have now in Australia is vastly increased than what it was in the 70s. Back in the 70s, we would work with women mostly in factories, whereas these days, the manufacturing industry has decreased a lot. And so we're visiting migrant women where they're working now, which is largely in aged care, hospitality, they're working as cleaners or support staff in hotels. And of course, there is still some food manufacturing in Victoria, so we still visit women in factories there. So the demographics changed, the workplaces that we visit have changed, but there's still an incredible need. And even in this information revolution that we've seen, where you can just Google anything, that kind of information, that method of getting information just isn't that helpful for migrant women, because they still need to have the opportunity to have a conversation about it with another migrant woman in order for that information to be meaningful for her.
Mm. Do we, you know, you've covered it a bit, but do we still need services such as MCWH, and why?
Well, one of the issues that we face and our reasons for existing is because the mainstream health system doesn't provide an appropriate service for migrant and refugee women. So in the first instance, it's not as accessible as it should be. So migrant women have a lower rate of access to health education, health promotion, and they therefore tend to be overrepresented in the acute sector of the health system. What's really needed is for migrant women to have access to preventative health information so that they can take action on their own health and also avoid acute situations, so they don't actually, you know, need to go to hospital for that other people, for reasons that other people wouldn't need to go for. So there's still a real need for that approach, where we're building capacity of women to take action on their own health. Migrant women's health in migrant women's hands is really the way that we see it, that migrant women are the best advocates for their own health, and they're the best people to actually take charge of their own health. And until our health system accurately and equally represents migrant women within it as doctors and nurses and leaders, then there's still going to be a need for a program like ours, which bridges that gap, I suppose, between the monocultural mainstream system and the kinds of communities that migrant women come from.
Mm.
Another way that MCWH has changed over the years has been that we've been able to do a little more research and advocacy and policy work. So we started out as a small organisation that worked directly with women in workplaces, and now we have been able to add on a research, advocacy and policy arm to our organisation. And that means that we're able to more effectively speak to government, talk to other organisations who are bringing in policies or legislation that impact on migrant and refugee women's health. And we're able to talk to them about what's happening for migrant women on the ground, so that they can then have a better understanding of how their policy or legislation will impact. So that's been a really important development in our organisation. And it means that we can have a much more national impact on really some really important factors that impact on migrant and refugee women's health.
Mm. And it's so important to lend to such important research and literature for the Australian context, because a lot of time when you look at a lot of issues into immigrant and refugee communities, the research just isn't there. And so that is such an important aspect of the work that you do to build those foundations.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we're working in this space, because we need an evidence base in order to do our work. And what we found was that actually the evidence base is not there. There are so many gaps. So we might know a whole lot about sexual and reproductive health issues for Australian women more generally. But when you have a look at the kinds of women who were interviewed for this research, or the who the survey was sent out to, you find that they actually haven't been engaging migrant and refugee women in that research. So you can't actually make any assumptions about the experiences of Australian non-migrant women when you're looking at that research. You really need to do specific research about migrant and refugee women in Australia in order to better understand the kinds of barriers they're facing. For example, visa status is a huge issue now for migrant and refugee women. And if you don't take that into account when you're doing research about the issues that migrant women are facing, or women more generally are facing, you're really not understanding the kinds of barriers that women face, and you're not documenting really some of the fears and limitations that women are facing, when they seek to escape domestic violence, for example, because they may not have access to services because of their visa category.
Mm. This year, MCWH is 40 years old, and so there'll be lots of things happening. What are some of your fondest memories from your time at MCWH?
I have many fond memories over the 23 years that we have existed. I must say, some of the stories that bilingual health educators come back to the workplace with are amazing. So we've heard some stories about women, for example, who had never heard anything about getting a pap smear. But then they attended our session in her first language. And this woman came back to us 6 months later and told the bilingual health educator that ran her session that she saved her life. Because after that session, she went and had a pap smear and she did have early stages of cervical cancer. But because it was early stages, she was able to get some treatment and she lived to tell the tale. So I think that's an amazing story and the kinds of, really important role that our bilingual educators play, where women have missed out on the kind of information that's accessible to everybody else. This is a way that they're able to get it and take some action on their own health. Mm. They're the stories I really like to hear.
Yeah. And for all our listeners out there, can you tell us how they can become more involved with the work that MCWH does?
We have a membership, so we're always inviting members to become a part of our organisation. And that means that you can be involved, make decisions relating to the organisation. We have some amazing resources like the monthly wrap, a monthly e-newsletter, which really canvasses our take on some of the issues that are facing migrant and refugee women. We love to have readers on that. And every month we have a 60 seconds person. So that's an interview that we do with a migrant or refugee woman that we admire. So we're always looking for 60 seconds candidates. And of course, one of the things that's very special about our organisation is that we're run by and for migrant and refugee women, and we're unique in that sense. There are no other organisations that we know of around Australia that is run completely by and for migrant and refugee women. And so it does make us unique, and it does mean that we're always looking for people to join our workforce. So if anyone's interested and they have the kind of work that we do and they have the background for working at an organisation like ours, then we're always advertising vacancies on our website as well when they come up. So that's another way to be involved. We're always wanting to welcome more women into the fold.
Wonderful. But thank you so much for joining us for this International Women's Day special, Adele, looking into 40 years of immigrant and refugee women's health and well-being through the work that the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health does. Thank you.
My pleasure, and happy International Women's Day.
And if you would like to get more involved in keeping migrant women's health in migrant women's hands, you can join the work that the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health does by visiting them at mcwh.com.au. My name is Hope Matumbu and you're tuned into 3CR 8:55 AM. It's International Women's Day, and we've just concluded a one-hour special program exploring and celebrating the work of the Multicultural Centre for Women's Health. If you'd like to know more about today's show, please visit us on www.3cr.org.au. And stay tuned with us here on 3CR 8:55 AM for more International Women's Day special broadcasts.
Want to support 3CR's diverse and independent voices? Donate now by calling 9419 8377 or donate online at www.3cr.org.au or post us a cheque or money order to Post Office Box 1277, Collingwood 3066.